Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Doug Rigg from La Cave de Perrin. How are you, Doug?
I'm well. How are you, Chris?
I'm very, very good. What's your role at La Cave?
I'm the sales and marketing director, which is a very sort of pretentious name for what I do. I liaise with the media and talk about La Cave de Perrin and what events we're doing. And I'm in charge of a team of 10 reps.
You may hear in the background we're near a train station. We're visiting you in North London, aren't we?
You are indeed, yes. Sorry about the background noise.
It's all right. It's great if you're a train stop spotter.
Yes.
Today we're going to talk a wee bit about natural wine. What is natural wine? Because it's a new movement, or relatively new movement.
Yeah, the movement is actually only probably about 10 or 15 years. I'm wary of calling it a movement because it's linked up of disparate growers and wine shops and wine merchants who have a sort of roughly the same agenda, but mainly they're just a bunch of good mates who like drinking the same sort of wine. It started in France probably about 15 years ago with just a few growers who started working without sulfur or trying to work without sulfur in their wines. But if I had to give a definition of what natural wine was, I would say it starts in the vineyard with sustainable organic or biodynamic viticulture, that's low intervention farming. And then it takes that practice into the winery where the wine is left as naked as possible, for want of a better word. In other words, there's no filtration, no fining. The ferments are with wild yeasts, and then the minimum amount of sulfur is used, usually a little more for white wines and a lot less for red wines. But the intention is to make wine that truly expresses the terroir, the sense of origin of the region, of where the wine originates.
You mentioned when we were chatting earlier the difference, one was a physical versus a chemical intervention. What do you mean by that?
Physical interventions are what the vigneron, the wine grower, or the winemaker is assigned to do. In terms of, you know, what sort of viticulture, you know, is it going to be organic viticulture or biodynamic viticulture? Neither use chemicals, but one biodynamic is more proactive, and organic is you don't use X, Y, and Z chemicals in the vineyard. In the winery, it's about physical things of deciding what sort of fermentation you want, you know. Do you sort of use carbonic maceration for the reds, or do you use a sort of more skin contact and try to get more tannic structure? Do you want a fruit wine, or do you want a wine which is for aging? Whereas chemical interventions are all the things, all the additives you can use, like you can acidify a wine, you can add alcohol to a wine, you can filter a wine, you can fine a wine, you can change wine's taste and structure, you can add flavorings, different sorts of flavorings. A lot of that is done in conventional winemaking. You can add oak chips or even oak dust to wine to give it an unnaturally oaky flavor. So it's about profiling, which is chemical, versus sort of the more natural approach, which is a physical approach.
And in natural wines, do they go down the chemical or physical?
So natural wines are physical.
Physical interventions.
Physical interventions, but the fewest possible interventions. I mean, ideally, I suppose in an idealized natural wine, there would be virtually no interventions. It would simply be the grapes harvested, beautiful, healthy grapes. You do a natural ambient wild yeast fermentation, and thereafter, you don't do anything, you know, until bottling. I mean, you might add a touch of sulfur just before bottling, just a microscopic amount, and then you bottle it, and that's it. And then you have the naked wine, basically. It's a bit like if you had a beautiful piece of fish or steak or whatever, a lovely piece of meat. You don't want to sort of smother it in sauce or change the way it is. You know, the act of cooking is the transformation and the only transformation you need.
You add sulfur, so you do have some chemical intervention.
There has to be a winemaker there, ultimately, just to interpret the grapes, to supervise. If something goes seriously wrong, the winemaker is there to intervene and make a decision. And the winemaker is there to look at the ingredients and say, right, okay, this vat I will blend into that, you know, to that wine, and that vat I'll leave by itself, and so on and so forth. So the winemaker will make the ultimate decisions. on the actual wine. So in that sense, there are physical interventions. But the winemaker is not there to say, I will correct this heavily.
Well, I suppose if you think about mass-produced wines on a large industrial scale, whether it be a big producer in Bordeaux or a big Jacobs Creek or Hardy's, you know, where they're supplying wine to the supermarkets and therefore they need to make a large amount of volume, and also consistency from year to year becomes quite important. Does that mean that natural wines are more small producers with more variable consistency? Would that be a...
Yes, it's the antithesis of that. On the one hand, the conventional mass-produced wine, which is effectively made in a laboratory or a huge factory, the idea is that wine should always be the same from year to year to year. It's like Coca-Cola, basically. Wine is a product. Contrast that to natural wine, which is every year is different. The weather is different, you know, one year to another. Some years are very rich, the wines. Some years they're lighter and fruitier. And that's the beauty of the thing, is that no two things are alike. Otherwise, you get bored by them. And of course, that presents huge challenges for the natural winemaker. Yeah, all the natural winemakers are almost by definition really small. Their vineyards are usually tiny. Their production is in you know, hundreds of bottles almost, rather than millions of bottles. So there's a massive difference in what we're talking about in terms of natural and conventional winemaking.
Yeah, natural wine to me seems quite unsophisticated. Is it unsophisticated?
It's reverse in a way. The best winemakers in the world are natural winemakers because they have far more challenges in the winery. Remember, they can't rely on chemicals to get them out of a problem. So, in other words, a conventional winemaker will make wine to a formula without understanding the wine, whereas a natural winemaker understands the wine and then makes the decisions based on the quality of the product. So, in fact, some natural winemakers are brilliant. They're brilliant winemakers. They don't regard themselves as winemakers because they are not making the wine. They're guiding the wine from the vineyard to the bottle with as few interventions as possible. It's like an artist. You know, the genius is not to sort of plaster something with too much paint. It's to let breathe, you know, have areas where nothing is happening and got the whole picture.
Do they use a lot of chemical analysis? You know, you look at a wine and you might look at its nitrogen levels and things like that, or because then you would have an idea about the decisions to make, whereas some wines... For example, we did an interview with Cloudy Bay a few years ago, and they were saying, you know, it starts in the vineyard. If you've got bad nitrogen levels, you can land up with stuck fermentations and reduction at the end. So the trick is to understand what you got coming into the winery to try and manage that. Would you say that natural wine producers look at the chemical analysis of the juice, or do they not even bother with that sort of carry on?
I mean, I'm sure some do, but most of them don't. I mean, most of them work on intuition and trial and error, really. This is not even to do with natural wines, but I visited a vineyard in Spain where the vigneron had lived there all his life. He knew all his vines, every single vine. He could pop a grape into his mouth and tell you that they'll be ready in 8 days to harvest. He said, I don't need chemical analysis. It's all in my head. And he's sort of pointing to his like head. You know, his head is a computer. He knows better than anyone. You don't need a satellite analysis of what's going on in the vineyard to know when to harvest. You just know. And growers are the same. Of course, it's all about the quality in the vineyard, basically. So, I mean, Cloudy Bay is an interesting example because, it's they make a million... 1.2 million bottles of wine. I mean, it can have so much vineyard definition there. Whereas we're talking about, you know, people who've got a hectare, 2 hectares, you know, a few hundred bottles worth. They work biodynamically or organically. They're in the vineyard almost all the time. They know what's happening from day to day. They bring in the harvest when it's right. You know, you've got the classic raw ingredients ready to make a great wine. Now, something can always go wrong in the winery. And that's just a question of being on top of the wine the whole time. So some ferments will stop. Some you'll get reduction here and whatever, and you just have to let it iron itself out. Actually, the thing about when you farm biodynamically, particularly, is that the vine develops resistance to disease, and what you get is much stronger product, and in a way it will work itself out in the winery because you've got sort of, as I say, the fantastic raw ingredient, which has got its own, you know, preservatives inbuilt. You don't have to add something to what's already there.
Do they do things like racking and filtering?
Racking, yes, occasionally. Filtering, very rarely. White wines, occasionally. If you want a sort of non-cloudy white wine, then usually there's a little light filtration. Fining, never.
Cold stabilization, so they're removing tartrates and things like that?
Most natural wines will have a sediment, will contain solids. You know, it's sometimes for the consumer, it's very puzzling because they think, well, what's going on here? But you think, well, that's the actual wine there. There's the lees, there's the tartrates. You know, this is all part of wine. You know, don't worry about it.
But that must lead to quite a lot of, first of all, bottle variation, but also you must find that places like France where this movement started, according to you, that they are very much, they've got these appellation control rules about what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do, and this wine must taste like a typical wine of the region.
Yes.
But you must land up with wines that are all over the place.
Yes, and a lot of natural wines are Vin de Table as a result, or now Vin de France, since Vin de Table has now been sort of got rid of. And they're proud to be, you know, because they're an individual statement of what the grower is doing. So it's a Vin de Table. No, it's cloudy. Yeah, and yes, it's got a, you know, shed loads of sediment in it or whatever it might be. But fair enough, that's the way the wine is. And I think bottle variation is part of being a living product. I mean, if we substitute cheese for wine, I think we get a great analogy. Basically, if you have unpasteurized cheese, you know, it's smelly, it's raw, it's and yet people don't, you know, aren't puzzled by it in the same way as they're puzzled by wine, which is different from one day to another, or wine which is like cloudy, or wine which is a bit sort of smelly. They're happy to have it with cheese, but not with wine. And I'm quite curious to know why people sort of think they're different products, because they're both natural products, ultimately.
What happens to a wine if you find that it's faulty for some reason, you know, either it's highly reductive or...
Well, should I say that reduction is not just a problem associated with natural wine. It's a winemaking technique that you know, conventional winemakers use as well as natural winemakers. So reduction is something that will often blow off just by when you pour the wine into a decanter or into a glass,
and breathe.
And a lot of wines are made without oxygen, therefore they will be naturally reductive to start with. Now, the reason why winemakers use it is because a certain amount of reduction can accentuate the minerality and the freshness and the crunchiness of the wine, and that's really attractive. In certain wines, like, for example, Sauvignon Blanc is usually highly reductive. Syrah is a reductive grape anyway. So it gives a sort of like a certain, almost like sort of, as I say, mineral saltiness to the wine, which is, you know, which gives almost like an element of structure to it. So there are other elements. There are other things which are interesting because I've debated them quite strongly. People think that that volatile acidity, which is something you find in certain regions and certain wines, to be faulty. Well, a lot of the greatest wines in the world have had volatile acidity. Chateau Reyes, Chateau Musard, Cheval Blanc 47, one of the greatest wines of all time. Now, is it that that's a fault, or is this a byproduct of what goes on, you know, when you're making wine? And I think it's a byproduct, and it gets absorbed into the wine. And some faults are not really faults; they're what I call flaws. Just like I might have a mole on a certain part of my body, doesn't mean I'm faulty. It's part of me. It's part of my character. And I think a lot of what people think are faults, like another one is oxidation. Oxidation is something that has been going on for hundreds and thousands of years in winemaking. It's part of giving the character of the wine. So, you know, sherry is oxidative. Marsala is oxidative. Chenin can be made in an oxidative way. It gives a wonderful sort of like notes of honey and some real interest in secondary aromatics, which give much more depth to the wine. And when you use it in a controlled way, it's fantastic and really interesting. So I dispute these things are faults. I think it's about using processes which are natural physical processes and incorporating them into the actual wine. Faults to me are things like, you know, cork taint, and which are obvious, or something which is like, I don't know, when the wine is totally knackered, you know, it's just turned into vinegar and there's nothing to redeem it.
So. Would you say that you drink a large variety of wines?
Not now. I mean, I really default.
Well, when I say variety, I mean in terms of style.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, there's the spectrum of natural wines, and one of the things that I've been trying to educate people about this is it's not all wild and woolly and sort of airy-fairy and sort of mad, as mad, bad and dangerous to know. Natural wines are from the most elegant, pretty, you know, whites to incredibly juicy, thirst-quenching reds, to sort of like, you know, tawny, yellow, amber, whites, to sort of wild, smoky, garrigue style reds, you know, and reduction on some and VA on others, and, you know, not filtered here. And yet, as I say, ones that you would think they were conventional just from the taste. So what unites them is the lack of intervention and the lack of sulfur. So you can achieve totally different results in your region, or, you know, by just slight differences in vinification technique.
Do you get excited by wines that are suddenly natural, but they're a lot cleaner or sharper or more pristine? You know, are you reveling in the mud, or are you're living in the mud because every now and then you're hoping to get a nice, fantastic bottle?
I have to say that my palate changes according to my mood. I mean, it's always been that way. And sometimes I love purity. I love purity expression. I love minerality. I love that crunch. So I like wines with high acidity. And natural wines generally have pretty high acidity. But sometimes I don't want funk. I don't like, you know, I don't want to be challenged constantly. So, but then sometimes, like, I have a bottle on the table here. This is a bottle of Sancerre, which tastes like no other Sancerre. And what it gives me is, it gives me not one glass, it gives me five different glasses of wine. The wine is mutating in the bottle, in the carafe. I mean, I normally carafe it. And I get like, wow, it starts off quite closed and quite mineral, then it becomes opulent and almost sweet. And then you get these secondary aromatics of honey and mushroom, then it goes back again, and it's changing. And I thought, wow, how many bottles of wine will give me five or six different glasses in which I'm just exploring with the wine? And I think you identify with the wine a lot more when it's like that, rather than having a wine which is one note at the beginning and the same note at the end. There's no development on the palate, no development in terms of the imagination or the challenge of the wine. So yeah, I love that sort of wine. It would spoil me if I drank it the whole time, though, because, you know, sometimes I just want a crisp glass of Muscadet or a Sauvignon or whatever, Riesling, and I want one note, you know, because I want to, you know, like, it's like drinking a beer. I just want one note. You know, I don't want anything too elaborated.
Yeah, so. It's like drinking lager after, yes, a day's wine tasting. Yes. You just want something that's wet and clean and not too challenging.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right then, Doug, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.